What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Simply Walk the Talk. I am your host, Joshua J. Holland, and we have a very, very exciting episode today. If curiosity killed the cat, Boomer's nine lives expired decades ago. Boomer is an entrepreneur, husband, podcast host, health optimization practitioner, investor, and retired barbecue champion. Boomer is the CEO of Smarter Not Harder, Inc., makers of Troscriptions. He is also the CEO of Health Optimization Medicine and Practice, a 501c3 nonprofit focused on educating doctors and practitioners on how to optimize for health rather than treat disease. In his own health optimization practice, Boomer works with entrepreneurs, leveraging large swaths of data and health technology. He also serves as a strategic advisor to Weldium and is a TEDx speaker. Prior to working on sitting at the intersection of health and finance, Boomer was based in Singapore, where he ran the South Asia debt capital markets business for a bulge bracket investment bank. Welcome to Simply Walk the Talk. Our bodies and minds adapt to what we do most of the time. If you want to change your body and mind, you must change what it is you do most of the time. This podcast explores all things health, wellness, fitness, lifestyle, and biohacking. Stay tuned as we explore various thoughts, methods, and experiences from a multitude of conversations between our interesting guests and experts through many fields of work. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Simply walk the talk. Simply walk the talk. Mr. Boomer Anderson, welcome to the show, bro.
It is an absolute pleasure, Josh. Look, we've known each other for so long, both virtually and in person. You've been on my show, Decoding Superhuman. We've hung out here in Amsterdam. So I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, man. You know, I was just sitting here thinking, and like, we have such a unique relationship because we've known each other for a while, as you just mentioned. And the big bulk of us knowing each other was virtually until we met in New York. And that was basically at the beginning of this most transformative part of my life, which was when we did PPR. So we'll talk about PPR and what that means. For those of you who actually know me and have talked to me over the last couple of years, you've heard me mention doing some sort of psychedelic retreat or psychoplastogenic retreat. And Boomer was one of the ones that helped facilitate that whole process for me. So in terms of knowing me at a very deep level, you're one of those people. And then of course, on this tour that I'm on right now with Roger Waters, we were just recently in Amsterdam, where you currently live now. And we got a chance to really connect at a much deeper level. So I feel like for those that are listening and watching, you're going to hear Boomer and I sort of catch up and just talk about loads of different things. He's as curious as I am and as well versed in many different modalities as I am and beyond. In fact, I've counted on you many times in helping me with peptides and supplements and all sorts of things. So sit back and enjoy this show, because I think we're going to really go down a lot of rabbit holes. And let's just start with your background. Let's start with, well, first of all, I think let's talk about this barbecue champion retirement.
It's a fun place to start, right? So, you know, it's funny, Josh, if I remember correctly, you grew up in Oklahoma, right?
That's right.
And so I, at least growing up, we moved around quite a bit because dad was always climbing the corporate ladder, so to speak. But one of those pit stops was Kansas City, Kansas, in a little town called, well, it was little at the time. I think now it's pretty built up, but Overland Park. And, you know, what's funny is that when you move to Kansas City, Kansas, you'd think that somebody would pick up barbecue and learn Kansas City barbecue, but this is sort of where the odd parts start in my life. It's it was funny because my father used to cook in the backyard and he would try and make ribs on what was a grill at that time. And somebody came up to him and said, like, hey, would you like to join us on this barbecue team? And the barbecue team actually cooked Memphis style barbecue. And for those who are not familiar with the various governing bodies of barbecue, the Memphis style barbecue is dry rub based. Kansas City barbecue is sauce based. And then if you get into the, if you get into like Carolinas, it's vinegar based, Georgia's pork, Texas's beef, and everything is a little bit crazy. But I had this experience growing up where my summers in particular were every other weekend. It was an alternate between sports. And so when I was younger, that was things like soccer and, you know, football to a certain extent. And then later on it was ice hockey and lacrosse. And then the other weekends would be driving to these really random Walmart parking lots all over the United States and competing in these barbecue competitions. And I think, you know, it's funny, I'm now 37 years old, and probably if I were to drop a resume of my various careers, so to speak, the one where I have the most accolades is probably barbecue. So, you know, this is, it's a funny space because, you know, the team that I was a part of at the time was called Crispy Critters. It later evolved into something else, but, you know, we've won World Barbecue Championship. Memphis in May is considered the Super Bowl of swine, if you will. And, you know, if you're outside of barbecue, all this sounds really ridiculous, by the way. We've won the worlds in chicken. I've personally was one of the youngest state barbecue champions in New Jersey at the age of 16. I won an adult category in ribs. And this was my entire life going from the age of 6, where I competed in my first competition and lost to my brother, who was 3. So it's kind of that, you know, is the start of the sibling rivalry, so to speak. And then really, though I still do it for fun, and I certainly do it because people are curious about the barbecue, I don't compete actively anymore. And so that ended when I moved to Singapore at the age of 25. Occasionally, I'll come back and do competitions. And in fact, next weekend, not this weekend, but next weekend, I'm doing something with my brother and my dad for some family and friends in North Carolina. So it's something that I still do, but it's a little bit of a, and I don't mean this as a derogatory term, but like it's a little bit of a redneck hobby that we had growing up. So it was a great way to see different parts of the United States, you know, Oklahoma, Texas, Colorado, all of these places. And you know, it's a unique upbringing I'm coming to find. When I was growing up, I just found that I thought that was normal.
Right. That's really fascinating because I can just imagine with all of your experience now beyond barbecue and how that might make its way into the barbecue. Because my knowledge of you, my experience with knowing you is based around biohacking, right? So now I just kind of imagine you adding methylene blue to the to the barbecue or something.
it would be interesting, right? Like, how could you hack barbecue? Because inherently, you know, smoke is a carcinogen. So it's right. You kind of get into those types of conversations, and then you and I are both sort of quantified self nerds, right? And so there's a whole bunch of quantification that you do with barbecue. You might have just sparked an interest in me, Josh, to like do this again for the sake of answering the question, like what would happen now, right? And so there you go. You might have just sent me off on another tangent. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah, obviously we can go down so many rabbit holes, but I think for the sake of the listener and the viewer, I would love to transition from your background and expertise in barbecue to how you got to where you are now. Can you kind of lay out the groundwork for that, please?
Sure. So let's do an interesting segue here. So there was a moment when I was 16 years old, and at 16 years old, most of us don't know what the hell they want to do with their life, but I had this come to know, Jesus moment. And it was at 4 a.m. in North Wildwood, New Jersey. And I was sitting there at the New Jersey State Barbecue Championship. And keep in mind, like 12 hours later was when I won that adult competition. But I was talking to a friend who was featured on the Food Network. And, you know, this guy's name's Jack McDavid. He used to run a show on the Food Network called Grillin' and Chillin'. And Jack is still a good friend of mine. And he ran that show with Bobby Flay, who Bobby has now like exploded, right? And so the Jack and I were sitting there chatting at 4 a.m. And this is when the bars let out in North Wildwood, New Jersey. I'm 16 years old. I'm checking out all the girls, all this stuff, right? And I said to Jack, you know, Jack, I really am considering becoming a chef, or I would like to go into finance. And Jack looked at me and he said, well, Boomer, if you become a chef, let me tell you what's going to happen. You're going to work nights. You're going to work weekends. You're going to work holidays. You're not going to be able to see your family. You're going to blow up every relationship you have, and you're going to end up with some sort of combination of mental health and physical health issue by the time you're 30. And so I took that to heart, and I was like, okay, I'm going to go do this finance thing. And so fast forward, I graduate from university and end up going to work on Wall Street. And I worked as an investment banker. And my first day was the day that Lehman Brothers collapse and AIG gets nationalized, right? And so it was an interesting time to be a part of investment banking. But everything that you've heard as sort of what are the features of being an analyst or investment banking are absolutely true. You know, I actually was doing what Jack described a chef would do, you know, working weekends, working nights. I would work until 2 a.m. and be back at the office again at 7 a.m. in the morning. I would, you know, blow up every relationship I had because I would not be able to show up to some dinner or some date, et cetera. And, you know, my family began to not really know me. And, you know, all of that kind of came true, but in the finance context, right? But there was this moment after my first year as an analyst where I kind of remembered this whole health thing mattered. And, you know, going back a little bit, my mother was a yoga teacher growing up. And so, you know, I had that connection that health is important for performance. You know, she was an early adopter of meditation before it was trendy. She taught me a lot about pranayama breathing and how that can reset your nervous system. And you know, I started connecting those dots that I could actually calculate a return on health. So the amount of money I invested in my health was directly reflected in my bonus. And, you know, I was doing this whole health thing, but from the traditional like men's health magazine point of view. And what I mean by that is, what did I care about? I was caring about, you know, how to sleep less, work harder, and look good naked, right? And those were kind of the three things. And, you know, I thought if I did that well, then everything else will be okay. I get to the age of 29, and this is after I've moved to Singapore and have roughly accomplished everything that I wanted to in finance and decided to leave my job. And, you know, then I found out because, you know, and I had this health insurance plan that I wanted to maximize the amount of tests that I could get, Josh. And, you know, what's funny is that like you finally meet that doctor that will write you the prescription for all these tests, you get super excited. And he's like, well, what do you want to order? And we're sitting there in Singapore. I'm like, give me everything. One of those tests was actually a cardiac CT scan for calcium. And so that looks at your heart and it looks at the arteries in your heart and the checks for the presence of calcium. Keep in mind, I just turned 30 at this point. Thing comes back and it says I have calcium in my heart, which calcium is like a later stage indicator. It's a lagging indicator of atherosclerosis in my case. And it was in this area called the Widowmaker, which is, of course, an intimidating name. And so I already resigned. And I'm now going into this space called entrepreneurship. And I have the leading preventable cause of death in the world sitting in my chest, right? And so it became very apparent that whatever I was doing before, that whole sleeping less, working harder, looking good naked was not the right approach. So I began to kind of dig in a little bit, and I wasn't getting the answers I wanted from the Singapore medical institutions. And there's nothing against those. It's just, I'm a kind of, you know, you and I ask questions that people aren't used to. Right. And so I started looking for answers. That one thing led to another, you know, in the process, I ended up moving to Amsterdam with my now wife. And I kind of focused a lot more on my health for a couple of years and understanding more that, like, health is a little bit more than just diet and exercise, right? The fact was, is that from the age of 18 to 30, I slept between 4 and 6 hours a night. From 25 to 30, when I lived in Singapore, I was on a plane a minimum of twice a week. And sometimes that would, you know, I remember calculating this, that like 1 week I was on 14 different one-way flights, right? And you know, you and I travel a lot, but that's excessive. And these are always changing time zones. So, you know, for 5 years, I didn't have a circadian rhythm. I didn't even really know what a circadian rhythm was until later. And so you start to realize that, like, these things like sleep, stress, your environment certainly impact your ability, both your ability to perform in the world, but also your ability for your body to kind of keep itself under under wraps, so to speak. And so I got really into the health world, and I got into the health world through data and quantification and the omic sciences, and eventually started a podcast. That podcast led me to meeting a few people, and here I am today. So that's that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah, well, that's obviously, you scan through that, and there's so many different branches that we could branch off and discuss. One of the first things I thought about when you mentioned this calcium buildup in your heart, and like alongside with the, what you call the men's health workout, so to speak, which is the working harder, sleeping less. And what was the other piece you said? Right. But that also paired with now knowing your extensive career in barbecue make me think the carcinogens from the smoke, even just eating the refined oils. Dr. Kate Shanahan talks about all of these carcinogens and refined oils and things like that. And so it made me think almost immediately, the fact that you retired from that may have also been a huge boost in your newfound health, along with everything else you learned. Did you ever consider that?
Oh, of course. And if we actually take the setting of, so we'll probably talk about psychedelics at some point, but like, so set and setting is a frame, a phrase that gets used quite often, right? But the set and setting of a barbecue competition is like the anti-health, like the anti-health event. And so what are you doing? So in a barbecue competition, you're staying up all night long to tend to a fire that, that needs to stay at a certain temperature, that is providing smoke into food. You're drinking, you're chatting with people, but you're staying up all night long. With that in itself is, you know, night shift work we know is a carcinogen, right? And so you're staying up all weekend long at night to basically have a 2-hour period where you submit dishes that are filled with smoke. And so, yeah, I do think, in many ways, I might have dodged a bigger bullet by doing this, and sort of by moving to Singapore and not being able to access all these barbecue competitions. Sure, I think that's certainly possible. And, you know, dependent origination here, all of the events in your life lead up to this moment. And so all the events in my life led up to at 30 years old, shortly after my 30th birthday, getting an angiogram and finding out all of this stuff, right? So it's fascinating to me, like, you can play through the history of it, but yeah, each of those points certainly added up to that moment where I found out, hey, something's different here.
Wow. It's really, really cool. And also, I can't help but touch on the fact that You're 37 years old. You've got all of this experience across many fields of work. Now I'm curious as to how you got involved with Troscriptions, because obviously that's how you and I got a chance to meet each other. And And then, of course, I'm sure we'll get into psychedelics and things like that. But I'm so excited because there's a number of things. Like I don't take notes for these interviews that I do, and I think most people know that. So it's really just you and I shooting the shit, right? And just getting a chance to kind of recap on all this stuff. But let's talk about your connection to transcriptions and all the ins and outs of that.
Sure. So, like you, Josh, I started a podcast, and we can get into your motivations behind starting a podcast, but I started that podcast because I had moved industries, I had moved countries, I had moved in with my wife, and I was trying to figure out what was going on with my heart. And originally that podcast was going to be called Fixing Broken. We changed the name because I didn't want it to be too negative, right? So I started a podcast because I wanted to be able to have access to all of the smartest minds in the world in this space where I knew nobody. And at that time, podcasts were relatively new. And so you can reach out to somebody and they would respond, and everybody likes to tell their story, right? And I can ask questions. Mm. So the podcast to me was a handful of free consults and the ability for me to ask questions that I desperately wanted answers to from leading experts. And so I thought it was the coolest thing in the world and a nifty way to save a few thousand dollars, right? And so started the podcast, and I get tossed around to various people, asking various questions. And one of the people that I was tossed to was Ted, Dr. Ted Achacoso. And so Ted is the founder of Health Optimization Medicine Practice and the founder of Transcriptions. And Ted and I were scheduled to speak for about 45 minutes. And we sat down and we spoke for 3 hours. And afterwards, and you know how it goes with Ted, right? Like, this is just who he is. And so he presented, at the time I was looking at how to build an operating model for human performance. And an operating model, to me, it's mapping out the data in Microsoft Excel of biochemical pathways and then determining based on lab results, like what were the tweaks that I needed to make so that I could get essentially my brain and my physical body to perform better. After that conversation with Ted, I kind of realized that he had a more simplistic model of looking at, or framework, if you will, of looking at this. And that was the framework that is health optimization medicine. And afterwards, I said, "Hey, how do I learn from you?" And I thought he was joking, but he said, "Come see me in London. I'm speaking at Health Optimization Summit." And those are two different entities, by the way. Tim Gray is running that, and then Ted is the founder of Health Optimization Medicine and Practice. And so went down to London, and I remember sitting down for like the first lecture, and somebody taps me on the back of my shoulder, right? And he says, "Open your mouth." And I'm like, "Oh dear God, what am I getting myself into?" And he, maybe I shouldn't share this story, but like whatever. And so he dosed me, and dosed me is the first microdose I've ever taken in my life, right? And we had a long conversation after that lecture, and he said, "If you're up for it, I'd love to have you come to Manila and train under me in his framework." So again, like all of this now in hindsight, like seems really fucking crazy, right? Like I went to London. I was already going to the Health Optimization Summit, so that was okay, but I then get invited to the Philippines, and I'm like, okay, I barely know this guy, but why not? And so book a flight to Manila, and it's right before Christmas, which Christmas time in Manila usually starts about September. You can always measure Christmas time wherever you are in the world by when Starbucks starts serving the peppermint mocha, right? But the peppermint mochas in the Philippines start in September, and it's just kind of funny. But we were there in December, and I spent 2 weeks with Ted, and we got to know each other obviously a lot better because we're spending 2 weeks together. And during that course of that conversation, there was an element that I could bring to the equation that other people that were involved in transcriptions and the nonprofit didn't have. And I just had a background in certain aspects of business. And so, you know, over the course of those couple of weeks, I get integrated into those organizations. And it was actually like this very natural flow to it, which in hindsight, I didn't even realize was happening until it was done. And so as of then, I was integrated into Trescriptions, and then we launched Blue Canateen and Just Blue and Trocalm. We're now in the process of doing some really nifty things in technology, working on a sleep formulation, working on a practitioner only line. So there's a lot that's going on, but that all started with what I would say is like this amazing generosity of Ted giving his time to, you know, some crazy twat from the Netherlands or who lives in the Netherlands. And, you know, he just, for whatever reason, we just clicked. And so since then it's, I mean, you can read about the rest on our website, really.
Right. It's fascinating because it reminds me of many different stories of people who have met Ted and have experienced Ted, right? Because it's very similar to me, obviously in a different way, but I distinctly recall Dr. Shaker Pai, his story about how he met Ted, which then ultimately led me to meeting Ted, which then ultimately led me to meet Ingrid and Scott and you, and the rest is history. And I think for those that are watching and listening, you may notice that Boomer has a slightly blue tongue, and you might notice me having a blue tongue all the time. I didn't do it for this episode, but I will as soon as we hop off, and maybe I will at the end of this. But it's there's so much more to Trescriptions than just having a blue tongue or having a orange tongue. And what you guys are doing was the most obvious synergistic partnership that I could ever have with a company. Yeah. And most of that stems from the top down. It stems from my work with Dr. Ted, and also with you and Scott and Shaker. And there's just so much to what you guys offer that I hope everything you just laid out, I hope people get a chance to really feel that and experience that, because it's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, it's unique. And I think it's worth just spending a second on the business model itself, because what we're doing is rarely done, right? When people, let me put a term out there. It's called the reciprocity model. And traditionally, when you think of a company that engages in philanthropic areas, it's usually they have a philanthropic arm who makes donations and investments in charities. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, it's great. But what we've actually created are two different independent organizations. One's a nonprofit, Health Optimization Medicine and Practice. The other's a for-profit, which is Smarter Not Harder, who makes Trescriptions, right? And those two organizations are interrelated because they have similar management teams, right? But there's also a giving back mechanism from Trescriptions. So anytime that Josh Holland or Boomer makes a purchase on Trescriptions website, a portion of that money goes to sustaining the nonprofit. And so the nonprofit has an education framework, which is some of what I hinted at earlier, that teaches doctors and practitioners on how to optimize for health rather than treat disease. So that whole feedback loop, that whole giving back is in the ethos of the company, because the companies are interrelated, right? And so that's a unique approach that, while some people have done it before, it's been a while since somebody's brought it up. And also now people are approaching this through like B Corps. You know, you and I know Vivo Barefoot, right? And I actually know Vivo through you. And so Vivo's a Barefoot, they're a B Corp, and they're doing a lot to give back to, you know, sustainability and regenerative living and all that stuff, right? And they're doing fantastic things. It's a slightly different structure than what we're doing, which is independently, like, we're putting energy into the nonprofit, and, you know, the faculty is a lot of the same staff that's in Trescriptions. We have products that actually support the nonprofit. So Trescription is actually designed to support that framework. And any product that we release is actually designed to put that support that framework. But again, this came from like top down, as you say, like Ted's mind works in such a way that, and really it's a lot of what I've learned from him is that whole giving back attitude, right? Because I mean, I came from Wall Street, like greed is good, man. But you have now, it sort of has been a great education to me, sort of like, okay, how can we make money, but also at the same time shift a conversation? Because if you look at the world right now, health is, I mean, you know this just as well as I do. You're in Copenhagen, right? And so Copenhagen is probably a cut above when it comes to the health world. But when you look at the world right now, healthcare is a little bit far from healthcare. And what we're actually trying to fundamentally create is the room for somebody like you, a health manager. And so a lot of people don't understand that there is room for a health manager in your life. And, you know, when you get sick, when you get shot, when you get, God forbid, get stabbed, like going to a doctor does, a traditional medicine doctor does make sense. Going to the emergency room, we're fantastic at that. But who's managing your health? Who's managing your performance? And that really is the shift that we're trying to create here, the tidal wave, the butterfly flapping its wings, so to speak.
Well said. And that's exactly why I am here doing what I'm doing right now on tour with someone like Roger Waters, who has understood and has made himself aware of the fact that he needs a health manager, because he has people around him that are at the top of their field in every facet of his empire, so to speak. And why would he waste any time or energy on something when he can have someone like me on the road? And I'm very grateful to be in this position. And I'm also very grateful to be able to lean on people like yourself, Dr. Ted, you know, Scott, Shaker, all of these people. And it's, I look at it as inclusion instead of exclusion. I used to really hang my hat on the fact that I was an exclusive celebrity fitness trainer. And for a while that worked and it was fine and I learned a lot from it. But now I feel like I'm way more open and wanting to work with as many people as I can, which is the reason why I started a podcast like you. And it's also the reason why I've, for many years, have considered starting retreats. And I know we've talked about doing that. And maybe that'll be a good segue into talking about PPR. But before we get into that.
Wait, can I just interrupt here? Because I think there's something that people need to understand, which is very cool about you and sort of your health and how good you are at, you know, I don't know what title you want to give yourself, but I'm going to use that phrase health manager, because Roger is around 80 years old, right? And like I went to the concert in Amsterdam with you, and he put on arguably the best production, the best show I've seen. And he has so much energy. And to do that night in and night out for as long as he has, like there's somebody behind that. And I think people need to realize that that somebody is right here interviewing me right now. So I'm grateful to be able to pick your brain at times. In fact, sometimes I curse you because I end up, you know, ringing up my credit card for something. I'm actually staring at the inertia wave, which is a device that you and I have talked about before, right? Like you and I have talked about the inertia wave and sort of the implications of it. And it's a very cool thing, but you know, I stare at it every day because my office, like it's hanging right here. I'm like, oh yeah, that's a reminder that Josh has, Josh and I have definitely connected. So thank you.
For sure. Well, thank you for that. And it's so interesting because I've finally gotten to a point in my life where I feel like I can accept when people talk nicely about me like this.
Yeah.
Because for a while it felt uncomfortable, but when I've settled into more of myself, and again, a lot of this comes from dissolving the ego and becoming one with everything through PPR and things like that. I I now can take that for what it is, and it allows me, it gives me the fuel to continue doing what I'm doing and to do this for more people. So thank you for pointing that out, and I very much appreciate it. And I am also equally as excited about all the things I learned from you. So not only are we, do we both have inertia wave, we both have blood flow restriction, and we have all types of cool stuff, which is a great segue for the Pomodoro break. Now, we discussed this briefly before we started recording, but for those of you that are new to this show, you may now notice that every single time I have a guest on the show, I like to break up the monotony of either a sedentary lifestyle, we're both sitting. Usually when I'm in New York and I'm recording this podcast, I'm standing. But even standing for long periods of time elicits a sedentary effect, right? Mm-hmm. So what I like to do is break that up, and I like to offer the guest that comes onto the show something that they would do when trying to break up this sedentary lifestyle.
All right, Josh. So I like to do kind of interval living, and I think the Pomodoro technique is like a fantastic example of how to do this. In fact, you know, the Pomodoro being, you know, interval productivity. And so, you know, for me, I have, depending on how I look at this, like I'm an entrepreneur, I run a handful of companies, and I have to, you know, be on almost at all times, but taking those breaks allows me to rest and return with more vigor, more energy. And sometimes those breaks look like going outside. It's a beautiful day in Amsterdam. And as you know, sometimes Amsterdam can be not so beautiful. So maybe I would go outside today, but for the sake of today, let's do something interesting. So I also have a sit-stand desk where I could just press a button and it adjusts. Just because sound quality is, I get comments on YouTube all the time, like, you gotta be careful with your sound quality. So I'm not gonna change the height of the desk, but let's do a little blood flow restriction, shall we? And so I have blood flow restriction bands here. I think Josh has them as well. And I'm just gonna put these cuffs on here. I'm gonna try to put them on and talk at the same time. That will be interesting. So blood flow restriction training, why do I like it? As I alluded to earlier, like I run a handful of companies, and that involves, you know, talking to people in places like the Philippines, Australia, all the way to the United States. And many of those people don't wake up until late in the day. But if you're busy all the time and you're not making time for yourself, are you going to be coming at those meetings, arriving to those meetings with the energy, the vigor, the presence that you need to deliver your best self? And so, you know, when you're dealing with busy people, as you are, Josh, you're always looking for these, you know, the cool kids would call it hacks, right? These time hacks to make the most of what you're doing. And so when it comes to physical training, there are days where I go to the gym because I love just, there's nothing I love more than slinging a barbell around. And I spent a year and a half training under somebody who at the time was at Westside, which Westside is, they claim to be the strongest gym in the world. It was Louis Simmons' gym, right? And so I was training for a year and a half. So I love like deadlifts, like classical powerlifting is one of my favorite things. But there are days in like a busy schedule, like yourself, Josh, where like, you know, you can't go and do an hour and a half long workout. So what do I do? And, you know, over time, this is one of the things I loved about one of our conversations, Josh, is that you gave me a term, which I've used several times, is like experimental knowledge, right? And over the years of playing around, I've built this experimental knowledge in various domains. And sometimes I get to pick people's brain like yourself. And so when it comes to working out, you know, one of the ways that I hack it, if I need to, is through blood flow restriction training. The cool thing about blood flow restriction, sorry, one second, is that the one I use, and I'll keep the brand on the other side, but the one I use fits in my carry-on bag. So this is B-Strong. And B-Strong was created by a guy named Jim Stray Gunderson. And he actually was the same person who did the research behind Live High, Train Low. And he's he was one of the key architects of the World Anti-Doping Association's list of banned compounds, right? And so he created this because, I don't know exactly why he created it, but he's been working with blood flow restriction for a very long time. And he has this minor obsession with something called hypoxia. But for me, why do I love blood flow restriction training? Because I'm always looking for, on those days where I cannot go sling a barbell around or can't hop on my Carol, which I actually use the Carol for longer bike rides rather than the short 20-second sprints. But if I can't hop on there for 20 to 40 minutes to get my zone two training, so to speak, you know, what do I do? And so if I only have 5-10 minutes, I'll put these things on and I'll do 3 to 5 different exercises. You know, we'll do like double biceps, right? Yeah. I'm going to do 3 to 5 different exercises, 15 to 25 reps. There is some people who are doing experiments in like these esoteric forums and Discord around lower rep counts, but you can do with a simple light resistance band like this. I can do, you know, chest press. I can do rows. I can do I can do bicep curls, not barbell curls. That's something else. And I can do squats and I could have a pretty decent workout. And what's funny is you look at this and you say like, hey, that can't possibly produce a lot of resistance, but it's not called occlusion, because occlusion actually is what you don't want with blood flow restriction bands, but the restriction of blood flow itself means that you're not going to be able to lift as much, and you're certainly going to have to be able to do it as long, but it leads to rapid gains in strength, rapid gains in muscle mass, production of growth hormone. And what I love using it for sometimes, even on the days when I do have larger workouts, is to recover faster. And so just getting that little pump, if you will, this is a fantastic thing for me to interrupt my day, to prevent the, using your word, monotony of Zoom meeting to research to, you know, building something to Microsoft Excel, right? And so that's a great way for me to break it up. But Josh, I'd love to hear how you use it.
Well, thanks for describing that. And again, for those that are watching or only listening, Boomer and I both have on these bands around our arms, our upper arm. And again, you can hop in at any point and help describe this. But what's interesting is we both have different types, but the overall idea is blood flow moderation. So like, you're correct in saying that occlusion is not what we're going for. We're not trying to create tourniquets around our arms, right? We're trying to allow for the venous flow, which is the blood that's flowing into the limb. But then we're sort of moderating or slightly restricting the arterial flow, which is the blood back to the heart. And what that does is creates this internal pressure. There's research to say that there's a buildup of nitric oxide that happens in order to dilate the blood vessels so that we can get more flow, because the body starts to sense that there's a blockage somewhere. So you want to try to dilate those blood vessels. And then with that comes so much more circulation and strength. And like you said, like, I don't even use resistance bands sometimes when I'm doing my workout. And I think maybe we should, just for a moment, just so people can kind of see how we might use it, maybe we do a rep scheme that you would typically do. I'm going to do mine.
Actually, Josh, I'm going to follow you, man. Tell me the rep scheme I should be doing right here, because let's say you're sitting on a desk, and this is, you know, I'm flipping the questions on you this time. What would you do just to sort of keep it going to break up that monotony? What would be some of the exercises you want to hit?
So there's one of my favorite exercise routines to do when I'm using any sort of blood flow moderation tool. I have Katsu, Boomer has on Be Strong. Both are really good. The only difference between Katsu and some of the others that are on the market is Katsu is one of the only ones I know of that has a cycle mode, which allows for this creates a pressure and then it releases that pressure and then it creates more pressure a little bit higher and then releases. And what that helps is in the recovery aspect, which is what you talked about and why you like to use blood flow restriction. I like to use it and not think about it. So I can put it on recovery mode or cycle mode, as they call it. And then, you know, I added this fancy little neck strap and I just hang it on my chest and set the number of cycles I want to do. And I can just walk around and do my thing. Yeah. But for the sake of this, both of us, I'm going to put mine on training mode, which is that constant pressure. And then I'll walk you through my favorite exercise, which is known as the NO dump, nitric oxide dump.
Ooh, okay? I love a good NO dump. So it's like Viagra.
Yeah. Yeah, it's exactly. And so again, I'm going to set mine just so you guys can see. So I've got the Katsu device here.
And so the Be Strong would come with one of these because you have that automated, right? And so this will come with a little bit of pressure. And with Be Strong, you get they walk you through how to do it. But I've got my straps on. I'm ready for Josh to kick my ass in the next couple of minutes.
Okay, so if you can hear this.
Oh, I can.
It's mine like is pumping up. Blood
pressure. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's pumping up. You can see the number here. So I set it at... I believe I set it at 330. So it's measuring the pressure within my arms right now. And when it gets to that number, 330, it likes to keep it there. So I can either keep this on and it keeps it at 330, or I can untether and then I can set this off to the side and I can go swimming. I can go running. I can do all sorts of stuff. So what I'm going to do is untether, just because it makes it easier. And I don't want to hear all the noise of the wah, 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 you know, every few seconds. So I'm going to turn this off. And now both of my arms are at 330 units of pressure. And then I'm going to go ahead and stand because I like to do the NO dump while standing.
Sure.
And we'll go through the four exercises for the NO dump. And if you're following along at home, you can do this with us. Okay, cool. So Boomer and I are standing. We've got the blood flow restriction on the upper arm. And you might notice by the time we finish, you're going to see all this vascularity. You're going to see these veins popping out of the arms. And here's the four exercises, okay? So the first one, and I do this a little bit different than the people who originally developed this idea. Mm-hmm. But it goes like this. So we're going to be, the first one is a squat with a curl. Okay, so, and it's like a quarter squat. Right, so it's a squat with a curl. The second one is a straight arm lift. And so I'm making a fist, I'm touching my quads, and I'm extending to the height of my shoulder like this. So every left and right is one count, okay? Movement number three, we're gonna click our fist together in front of our legs and then click our fist together above our heads. So click, click, all right? And then the fourth exercise is just a straight shoulder press. And I want to make sure that our hands and forearms are as far back as possible to open up the chest and shoulders. And we're going up and coming down, making sure to bring your elbows down as close to your ribs as possible as well. So those are the four exercises. For the sake of this, let's just do 10 reps. Okay, you can follow along with me. And also, the whole point of this, by the way, I'm sure you know this, but for people who are curious why this is labeled NO dump, nitric oxide dump, is because we're supposed to be nasal breathing the entire way through. Okay, so you can put some mouth tape on if you want, or just breathe in through the nose. If you need to breathe out the mouth, that's okay with pursed lips. But I like to do the whole thing in the nose, out the nose. So to keep me able to do that. I was hoping, Josh, that you would tell me
this is natural Viagra with an NO dump. But let's see how we go here.
Natural Viagra works too. Just be careful. We're on camera.
Yeah, I know. I'm making sure that my waist down is not covered. So
exactly. All right. So we're going to do 10 reps, and it's at a relatively quick speed, which is unlike some of my other training. Also, I'm going to not speak for these 10 reps. And again, we would normally do this 3 or 4 rounds, but I'm only going to do 1 round of this so that, you know, we can move on and continue talking. Sure. Okay. So if you're not watching this, pause this thing, go to the YouTube video and watch this, because this is cool. You get to see us get pumped up for a moment.
We'll throw it on OnlyFans too. Don't worry.
Oh yeah, exactly.
All right. Let's
All right. Here we go. Ready? And let's go.
Feel like a bushwhacker.
All right, that would be 1 round. Right. So I would continue doing that for 2 or 3 more rounds, depending on the time. And that's just the 10 rep version. The 20 rep version is what's really a killer. So, mm-hmm. And right now, like you can see, I don't know if you can see my arm, but I'm already feeling like there's a big pump. I got veins in my forearms popping, and that's simply because I have a little bit of pressure in my upper arms with the bands on. So for those of you that are curious about BFR or BFM, blood flow restriction, blood flow moderation, feel free to hit either of us up. And, you know, also maybe I'll link to some of the workouts I did, the full workout. If you want to follow along with the NO dump, I have a video on YouTube, on my YouTube channel, that shows the entire workout with the Katsu bands on or the BFR bands on. And I promise you will be pleasantly surprised at how tough that is.
Yeah, it's so funny.
I'm going to take these off.
I find it funny, and just to kind of round this out, that there's, of course, when anybody gets into working out, there's a lot of ego around it, right? Like, how much you bench, bro. That was what I grew up with, at least.
Yeah.
And, you know, when it comes to blood flow restriction training, you know, less sometimes is more. And also it's very humbling to realize that, like, hey, I can get really tired with 0 weight in 20 reps. So, you know, Josh, thank you for showing me the NO dump. That's great. You guys can check out the bottom half of the screen on OnlyFans. You know, we'll see how that goes.
Exactly. All right. That was fun. And again, that's a really great sort of segue or notion into the idea of breaking up your day. And I love how you mentioned, what was that term you used? Interval, like something about intervals in your day.
Yeah.
Like,
interval living.
What do you call that?
Interval living.
Yeah. I like that. I really do like that. Interval living. So there you go, people. If you can add some sort of interval or Pomodoro break or movement snacks, I've heard people call it movement snacks, do something to sort of break up what's going on, because you will notice that your brain adapts better. And I also like how you said rest and return. I think you mentioned that earlier too. Mm-hmm. And I love that. It's a great idea.
Yeah. I think, look, we have, it's interesting because, like, if you think about stress as a bucket, right? And stress can come in many forms. It can be environmental. It can be work, which is the one we traditionally think of. It could be relationships, et cetera. That bucket has a tipping point before it spills over. And one of the biggest areas of work for me has been around that element of stress and making sure that the bucket, so to speak, doesn't tip over. And this way of interval working, or interval living in some cases, helps to make sure that that bucket also expands, right? So you're able to handle more stress, more resilience, et cetera. So it's just something to consider for people. You know, there's a constant focus in this world on output, but sometimes the rest will actually have a multiplier effect on the output. Or said another way, the rest actually equals the stimulus, right? And this is something that I know you talk about, Josh, with a lot of your clients too.
Absolutely. So I know that we must talk about PPR before we wrap this thing up.
Sure.
And I just want to make sure we don't miss that.
Okay.
And then I think from there we can obviously cover anything else that we need to or want to. And obviously the fact that we're already an hour into this show and we've only scratched the surface means we're going to have you back on the show at some point. So, you know, let's not forget that we also have the option to have you back on the show. Yeah, so it's all good if we miss something. So let's talk about PPR. What is PPR?
So PPR stands for psychoplastogen retreat. It's like a psychoplastogen retreat. And what does that actually mean? Because the term that most people are familiar with is psychedelics. And psychedelics is a term that we prefer a little bit less, because oftentimes that gets confused with doing something just for the sake of getting high, right? And in psychedelics, if you look into the definitions of the term, it actually encompasses a lot of the classical psychedelics are ones that act on something called your 5-HT2A receptor or serotonin. And those are tryptamines, right? So these are your LSDs of the world, DMT, psilocybin. And so you have psychedelics, but when we looked at a different way to create a retreat around this, and again, I think you were a part of the first time we actually expanded this beyond kind of the company, if you will. What we were looking to do ties back into the ethos of everything we do, which is democratizing enlightenment, right? And so democratizing enlightenment, and enlightenment is a little bit of an obtuse concept for most people, but just to simplify it, enlightenment defined is just freedom from the illusion of the self. And the self actually in most cases is the ego, the Josh that we present here. And so when we started looking at creating an experience around how we can potentially give people an experience of enlightenment, of freedom from the illusion of the self, we looked at a class of compounds which was actually defined a couple of years ago as psychoplastogens. And psychoplastogens are compounds that have similar effects to psychedelics, slightly different, but also improve the plasticity of your brain. And in many ways, we looked at this in a similar way of redefining how we redefine nootropics, right? Because we spent a lot of time looking at how people looked at nootropics and said, like, okay, nootropics now encompasses smart drugs. So this whole thing needs a new definition. And so what Ted and his brilliant mind did is looked at the whole class of psychedelics and said, okay, rather than saying psychedelics, why don't we use psychoplastogens, right? And so psychoplastogens, it's a series of compounds that we use to demonstrate or give people an experience of freedom from the illusion of the self. And so, Josh, I can go into what that kind of format looks like if you want, or we can take this in any sort of direction you would like here.
Let's give the surface level explanation, because obviously I know you mentioned that you've done some talks on this already, so we could lead people to those links. Also, it gives us an opportunity to get people to sign up, because I know that there was a sign up thing on the on your link tree or your mm-hmm. whatever it's called. And so I want to make sure that people have enough information to be interested, and then they could reach out.
Sure. And keep in mind that this is bred out of years and years of experimentation. And I think when you're coming to this, let us actually kind of go through the area of psychedelics as a whole and psychoplastogens as a whole, and then I'll hopefully arrive into a spot where you can understand how this all developed. So I'm going to tell this through a personal story here first, because if there's anybody who is a skeptic about psychedelic substances or drugs in general, it would be me, right? I grew up getting absolutely beaten by the DARE officer in the school, or, you know, whoever, my parents even, to a certain extent, saying that don't do drugs, right? Like, drugs are bad. Well, and I had experiences to verify that, right? Like, I played ice hockey growing up, Josh, and two people on my ice hockey team, one when I was 16 and one after I graduated high school and went to university, died as a result of drug use. And one of them was a drug dealer. He got executed, essentially. And then the other one committed suicide. And so if there's anybody who actually doubted the validity of these substances, it would have been me. And so, you know, fast forward a couple of years, and then you start to see like this very prominent paper in The Lancet demonstrating the safety and efficacy of drugs, particularly looking at the safety for oneself and the safety for society. And they mapped essentially on a chart substances ranging from alcohol all the way down to something like ketamine. And with each of these substances, they graphed it. And what you found was that among the most harmful to society was alcohol. And this is in British population, but one of the least harmful, and I can send you a link to this paper, Josh, because I think it's worth people taking a look at. But, you know, number one is alcohol, number one or number two is alcohol, and number two is the other one is heroin. And then you start going down, and it's not until like 15 or 16 that you start seeing these names like psilocybin, LSD, ketamine, and actually ketamine comes before both of those. And, you know, David Nutt published this study, and it kind of made me think like, okay, maybe there's something I'm missing here. And now keep in mind that the area that I failed to address the most in my health journey was this area of stress. And so, you know, oftentimes when you're looking for an answer to something, the teacher shows up, and this is where, you know, we started interacting with these substances. And, you know, you're trying to familiarize yourself with some of these substances and what they do. And you start realizing that there's a cast of characters who've been researching this for decades, right? James Fadiman, he is actually one of the people who originated the idea of microdosing. You know, to a certain extent, Paul Austin has popularized a lot of James Fadiman's stuff, but also he's done a lot of good research at the third wave. And then you have other characters. And one of my favorites is a guy by the name of Alexander Shulgin, or Sasha Shulgin. And he was the first person to resynthesize MDMA. And so he also wrote two books, one called Pical, Phenethylamines I Have Known and Loved, and Tical, Tryptamines I Have Known and Loved. And so a phenethylamine is a certain class of drugs that largely behaves in sort of a semi-stimulative nature. This could also include your cathinones. And so MDMA is an odd phenethylamine, but the other ones could include, and this is one that you and I have discussed a little bit before, something like a euthylone or a 3-MMC, for instance, which just recently got banned. And these are certain class of substances that don't necessarily produce the hallucinogenic effects that people think of when they think of classical psychedelics. So you have phenethylamines as one category. Mm. You have tryptamines in another. And so tryptamines are largely classified. And again, I'm speaking about this from my own experience. There are dozens of scientists and experts out there who would be able to go into them in more detail than I will. But The tryptamines are largely classified as those that act on the 5-HT2A receptor, and these are your classical psychedelics, the LSDs, the DMTs, which is the kind of ingredient that people think of when they talk about ayahuasca, the psilocybins of the world. And then there's a third class that we played around with called eriocyclohexylamines, which is sort of man-made compositions, and these are where your ketamines are, right? And so when we began experimenting with the hypothesis of like, how do we give somebody the experience of enlightenment, you start looking at these classes in slightly different ways. Some of them are ego expansion. Some of them are ego dissolution. And we play with those in a certain pattern in a controlled set and setting that allows you to have that ability to see your ego as it arises, to be able to observe the stories that you tell yourself and the fact that that may not be exactly what's going on. Because remember, a thought is really just a pocket of neurons firing in a certain way because of all of the experiences that you've had in your life. And if you're looking for a good book on this, Alex, what's his surname? Alex Rosenberg wrote a book called The Atheist Guide to Reality. And while it has nothing to do with atheism, it's actually worth reading because it goes into those pockets of neurons and those kind of things. So the PPR develops over a series of experiments over a number of years, and there are more doctors than people involved, more doctors than non-doctors involved in the team that has put this together. And what we do is we take a group of people to a certain location for a period of a minimum of what we prefer is around 5 days, right? And so you go through this pattern of opening up and sharing your experiences living on this planet. Then you go through what some may call ego death or ego dissolution. And then we actually kind of show you that again, the ego expansion element of it. And it's all done using these various classes of compounds. And what we say is that it's a silent experience, but also silent integration, or wordless experience, wordless integration. And that integration component, what we do is we bring in a lot of these technologies that you and I love, right, to help. Because by definition, let's go back to that definition of psychoplastogen, right? So a psychoplastogen will actually improve your brain's plasticity over time. And so your brain's plasticity, your neuron growth, et cetera. And just to give you an example of that, DMT promotes neurogenesis. Ketamine promotes dendrite growth. And so we can use an experience like a ketamine journey to give somebody the chance to do, to learn something new, right? Or to ingrain new behaviors. So what we do differently is, while you're going through these experiences on various days, and each day has a theme, each day is catered in terms of food, there's catered in terms of teaching, is that you also are being, in some ways, you can be rewired to work on certain behaviors. So for me, one of the things when I first started getting into this space, what did I work on? It's anger, right? And so I have I was one of those people who became an entrepreneur because I wanted this concept of freedom, right? And, you know, I wanted to be able to dictate my own day. And to a certain extent, that's true, but we all have people that we report to. It can be investors, it can be customers, et cetera. It can be, in the case of sitting in a CEO role, like you are working for your employee, like you are working for the people that are employed in the organization. It's not the other way around. And so, you know, one of the things that I was working on is anger and the awareness of anger. And you can use an experience like ketamine and the period 6 hours afterwards to help rewire, reframe some of your brain so that that seemingly automatic response of anger begins to dwindle over time. In some cases, it fixes like that. But in certain cases, it may take a little bit while. And so we've developed this format of a retreat such that somebody can come in and no matter, you know, there's a very thorough intake. You know, Josh, we all knew you before you came to the Psychoplastogen retreat. And that allowed us to, like, we knew you, we knew enough about you. We knew, you know, that you're a healthy individual, that we also had discussions about areas you want to work on, right? And so those, that intake is incredibly thorough. You know, we make sure that you're not taking medications like SSRIs or anything like that, where there could be a danger. And again, the majority of the team is doctors. And so you're well taken care of. You go to a specific set and setting, which is very controlled, to produce this experience of being able to, at least for a brief moment, and maybe it ends a longer time, to live without suffering, right? And so that's really the essence of the Psychoplastogen retreat. And it has been developed over a very long period of time with tons of experimentation. And so it's something that we will be rolling out to the world in the not so distant future. In fact, we've already kind of rolled it out to the world.
It's beautiful. And thank you for the very thorough explanation, because I wouldn't be able to explain it the way you explain it. And so at least now I have this as a reference or as a resource for those who ask me about my experience, because it's one of those things that I remember when we were leaving. It was one of those things where we talked about not comparing your journey, and not everyone, I don't think everyone deserves to understand that journey, because it's very vulnerable and it's very personal, and every person's journey is different to the next person. But then I think every individual's personal journey is also different each time you go through this, right? Because we're going to be working through different things. And I can certainly say my life has changed very much for the better after having done this. And what's also been interesting is the fact that I still have yet to be called to do it again. And I'm just listening to the universe and feeling into everything. But I feel like I still am integrating constantly. And, you know, there's obviously various substances that I'm experimenting with that allow me to tap back in. But the meditations I've had since then and the experiences in life that I've had since then have been profound, mm-hmm. absolutely profound. So I hope that people listening and watching, I hope you get an opportunity to check in. Just stay tuned, because I'm sure we'll be able to list a lot of the information to allow you to check in on that for sure.
Yeah. And I think, you know, oftentimes, whether it's friends, family, et cetera, they ask, like, what has been the biggest benefit to you when it comes to using these substances? Because again, like, keep in mind my background, like, people I know use these substances and die, right? And that prevented me from a long time from being very open to this experience of using these for the betterment of living. And what's been the biggest benefit to me is that anytime I come back from one of these experiences, and Bessie, my wife, we go out for dinner usually the night when I come back, right? Because, you know, you've been gone for a while, right? And like, wifey wants to spend some time with you, and it's nice to go out for a nice dinner and say like, hey, I'm still a normal person. But I'm always, like, she always comments about how present I am. And to me, if you kind of look at the foreground of everything we do, whether it be your work, your hobbies, your relationships, your elements of your spirituality, your community building, the background that is sort of the multiplier effect of your ability to deliver in all of those areas is presence. And so that's been the single largest benefit to me of using all of these substances, really.
Mm. Yeah. Wow. I can certainly say from my perspective, I feel like I've always had a big sense of empathy towards others. But ever since my PPR experience, it has been transformed to even more empathy, if you can imagine that. Yeah. And it's also, I think it brought up more patience within me. And again, I seem to be someone who's very patient and very empathetic, but now it's even more. And it's just kind of like I understand now not only the pain that other people are dealing with, but I also can recognize when the ego, when my own ego pops in to try to save me or help me out. And I can literally just think to myself, no, thanks. You're not needed right now. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? It's all good.
Absolutely.
So for that, I am very grateful to have had this experience. And it's also, I'm very grateful that you were there to be a part of it, because we've deepened our friendship and our working relationship together ever since that.
It's been amazing. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'm incredibly grateful for you, Josh. I think, you know, I list a handful of people as my kind of, you know, if you think about your life in terms of your mentors and stuff like this and board of advisors and, you know, in terms of movement and really looking at movement in a different way, you know, I list Josh Holland at the top in terms of people who've influenced me to look at movement in a very different way. Because before it was just like clang and bang weights, right? And, you know, occasionally I get an injury, you nurse the injury and you go, but you've definitely shaped that. And so thank you.
Of course. Thank you, brother. Before we wrap up, I would love to briefly talk about transcriptions
sure.
a little bit deeper, especially with the fact that if we're going to use this as a resource for people, it just makes it easier for me to say, no, just watch this episode and you'll learn all you need to know about PPR, transcriptions, methylene blue, all of that. If you could, in a surface level explanation, just explain blue-carnitine, just blue, you know, all of it.
Sure. So let's start with just transcriptions in general. So transcriptions, what do? We produce formulations for health optimization in the form of a buccal troche. And now let me kind of break down what those really mean. So a buccal troche is a unique delivery mechanism to transcriptions because we're the first people that are really using it commercially outside of a hospital. Buccal troche is a lozenge that goes in your upper lip between your cheek and gum. And it dissolves in about 15 to 30 minutes. Now, why do we use it? Is that because the buccal mucosa produces a very predictable effect when you use the troche. And so you generally feel that onset with less ingredients in a similar amount of time. So that 15 to 30 minutes. It also bypasses something called first pass metabolism, which again, allows us to focus on using less ingredients in a more pronounced effect. The formulations component of it, we don't view ourselves as a food dietary supplement company. We are making formulations for an effect. Now, what do I mean by that? If you look at the effect of blue-carnitine, it's focus and flow states. If you look at the effect of just blue, it's mitochondrial health and memory. He's got one of our almost condom looking packets. There we go. And then if you look at Trocalm, it's a formulation for stress and stress resilience. Now, if you actually back up just a second and look at the markets where transcriptions tends to play in, remember, everything goes to supporting that framework of health optimization medicine and practice. So there we teach people largely nutrient and hormone balancing. That takes about 3 to 9 months in the most diligent of clients. And so people need something to serve as pattern interrupts to their day to give them freedom from suffering from lack of focus, freedom from suffering from lack of energy, freedom from suffering from brain fog, from suffering from stress. But if you look at those markets that we're actually dancing in, so to speak, or producing formulations for, they also overlay with the largest prescription drug addictions in the United States. So the ones that we can point to right now, so ADHD medications, right? Blucanatine. We do, and again, we can't really say this, you know, publicly here. And, you know, I'm not a doctor, speak to your doctor before doing any of this. But if you look at how we formulate, they're on a receptor equivalent basis to a lot of these larger prescription drugs. Trocalm is formulated on a receptor equivalent basis to something like Valium, for instance. And what we intend to do is to continue to give people formulations that are alternatives to some of these larger situations, if you will. And so what does that mean for the future? Well, you would just have to throw into Google, you know, what are the largest prescription drug addictions in the United States? And there's a couple of obvious ones, right? And there's areas that we want to tackle because they're inherent areas of need. And so if you think about how to reduce suffering in somebody, which is, again, at that ethos of the brand, because we are after that democratizing enlightenment, you know, pain, sleep, all of these areas come to mind, sexual health, et cetera. And so let's talk a little bit about each of those individual formulations here for a second, and, you know, I'll then pause. And so where do you want to go first, Josh?
Let's start with arguably my favorite one, which is Blucanatine. And in fact, I'm going to take this while you're describing it.
So Blucanatine has four ingredients. Four ingredients are CBD, caffeine, nicotine, and methylene blue. And I'll go through those in that order. Actually, let's throw CBD to the end because it has a particular role in this formulation. So why does somebody use, or why have we heard from customers why they would use Blucanatine? It's great for accessing focus and flow states. And so it's not something that you necessarily need to take every day, but it's fantastic for accessing those focus and flow states. And you get it within 15 to 30 minutes. The effect usually lasts from 3 to 6 hours, right? Most people start with about a half a troche. And this is really dependent on how much coffee you have or how much caffeine you consume during the day. And also, we've generally found lean body mass. People with higher levels of lean body mass tend to need more. For instance, one of our good friends is Chris Gethin, and Chris Gethin is a giant bodybuilder, right? And so he needs about two trochees in order to get the effect that he wants. But for myself, I need a half, right? And so it's somewhat dependent on size and caffeine intake. But let's go through each of these ingredients. So methylene blue. Methylene blue has this amazing history as being the first drug approved by the FDA in the 1890s for the treatment of malaria. But it's also kind of faded into the background. It was used by psychiatrists as a dye to make sure that their patients were taking their prescriptions. You will find that if you take methylene blue, your pee may turn blue or green. And we generally think that's a good thing. It's a sign that you have a functioning antioxidant system in some cases. Now, if you look at methylene blue and how we use it, it has benefits to spatial and non-spatial memory. It has benefits to ATP production. And so it helps increase ATP or adenosine triphosphate production, which is really your body's energy currency, in at least 8 different ways. So we use methylene blue for that reason in particular. Number two is probably the most controversial ingredient of the bunch, and that's nicotine. Nicotine is the world's most misunderstood nootropic. It's also my favorite single ingredient nootropic. You're holding that that spray that I love so much. And in fact,
I have this because of you. Thank
you. And in fact, every time I get on a podcast, if I don't have a blue tongue, it's usually because I hit the spray beforehand. And so nicotine attaches to your acetylcholine receptors. There actually are specific nicotinic receptors in your body, but it attaches in your acetylcholine receptors and allows for a flood of neurotransmitters to take place. We classify nicotine as what we call performance optimization nootropic. And so that's something that impacts your brain's performance, but may not necessarily have health benefits. Nicotine is the world's most addictive, one of the world's most addictive substances, right? And But that threshold for addiction, at least in my discussions with Dr. Neil Grumberg, who's one of the world's foremost experts in nicotine, is typically around 5 milligrams. Each blue-carnitine troche comes with 1 milligram, and most times people are going to take a half. And so why do we add nicotine to this? And the original reason why we formulated blue-carnitine was for those focus and flow states, but also for jet lag. And so if you need a focus flow, and you also need to speak after getting off a plane from the United States to Manila, which is a 12-hour time difference at a bare minimum, it's helpful to have something that provides verbal fluidity. And nicotine certainly does that. I also find that it helps with hand-eye coordination in particular lifts and stuff like this. And I would be curious, Josh, as you're in the exercise field, as you use this and try to do like complex movements, if you find that nicotine specifically, but also blue-carnitine as a whole helps you more with that.
Caffeine. For sure. And sorry to cut you off, but I just want to make sure that I interject with this piece. Most people need to realize that the average cigarette has approximately 12 to 20 milligrams of nicotine.
And cigars more than that, right?
So. Right, exactly. So I myself just took one full troche of the blue-carnitine, which is 1 milligram of nicotine. Yeah. And so just for people to just understand that, because I have sent some of the pieces that you guys have put out on the Instagram for transcriptions and some of the other social media platforms. And it's been helpful to share that. But I think it's also good to just drive that home. Yeah. It can be addictive if you have an addictive personality and you use too much, period.
Exactly, right? And so anything can be addictive if you have that addictive personality and you don't control for where that is addiction threshold is. And we always, like, ethos of the brand, we educate, and we're going to continually educate you. Caffeine is the third ingredient in it. Caffeine, of course, helps with wakefulness. And then CBD actually helps round out that entire experience. And so if you take that nicotine spray, Josh, and you sprayed it right now, I don't know if you remember the Budweiser commercials where they used to do like bitter beer face, but you would get something, I think we should just call it like bitter nicotine face, because it's a very interesting experience, right? It's very sharp. And so we needed something to round that out and actually extend the effect. And so that's what CBD does in that whole thing. And so you can use it for, I use it for longer workouts because it helps me with pace. I use it for focus and flow states. I actually took some before this conversation, and I find it to be very, very helpful in areas like public speaking as well. So that's blue-carnitine.
Do you know rope flow? Are you familiar with rope flow?
And we're not talking about the inertia wave, right?
No. The actual rope flow, which next time I see you, or maybe we even do it like virtually, I want to take you through that, because that is one of the best ways to understand in real time what you're talking about, mm-hmm. right? This connection between body and mind, this cognition, the fluency of movement, opening up the neural networks to be able to learn something. I feel like rope flow was one of those things where maybe you've learned to do a dragon roll, or you've learned to do various different movements. They have different names for it. Rope flow is one of those ones where I always use blue-carnitine when I'm doing that. Mm-hmm. I also use ketones as well, which could be a whole different conversation. But it's a powerful punch, right? Yeah. I actually ordered some to my next destination, by the way. So I'm going to have Frank on the show at some point. But this is one of those things where if people need to figure out, like, does this actually work for me or not, try something like rope flow, or try some kind of complex movement pattern in which you have to learn a certain flow, and watch what happens when you use blue-carnitine.
Yeah, cool. And it's what I've found. So back when I used to do CrossFit, Murph, you'd do, and I still kind of do that every Memorial Day, right? Because it's just a fun thing to do. But that is a pacing workout, right? And it, mm-hmm. it, like, when the whistle blows and you start going, there's a tendency for people to flare out quite quickly. And what I found with Blue Cannotine is it helps relax me throughout and just make sure that, like, hey, this is my game, my own pace. I don't care what everybody else is doing. And I believe part of that, because nicotine actually has somewhat, I wouldn't call it an adaptogenic effect, but it brings you up when you're down. It gives you energy. It brings you down when you're up. And so it's certainly an interesting molecule and an interesting formulation overall. Where should we go next, Josh?
Let's just quickly go over Troll Calm. Sure. And then we can do our two questions and wrap up.
Sure. So Troll Calm is our formulation for stress and stress resilience. The combination of CBG and CBD in there. And so CBG is cannabidiol. It's also referred to as the mother of all cannabinoids. That combination, that ratio in Troll Calm is known to help with stress. And so we use those cannabinoids there to help build up your endocannabinoid tone, which I know you did a podcast episode with Dr. Ted all on cannabinoids. And so I think that's worth going to if people are interested in kind of getting a little deeper in cannabinoids. The other two ingredients in there are something called kava, which is a positive allosteric modulator of the GABA receptor. And also it's a tea that's been around in the Pacific Islands, where my wife is from, for a very long time. And it's also includes something called N-nicotinyl GABA. And so N-nicotinyl GABA is a GABA agonist. And those two in particular work well together in that the positive allosteric modulator only has a multiplier effect on the GABA receptor if the GABA agonist is already in place. And so we give you a full GABA agonist of N-nicotinyl GABA plus that positive allosteric modulator, and it allows you to relax. The other thing about N-nicotinyl GABA is that it's the only form of GABA that actually crosses the blood-brain barrier. People spend a lot of money on GABA supplements. It's not crossing the blood-brain barrier until you add B3 to it. And so B3 is just niacin, and it crosses the blood-brain barrier, allows you to relax a little bit. Quarter troche goes a long way for any sort of performance anxiety. A half a troche is my favorite happy hour troche, and so I use it to transition into the evening. And a whole you can use for people that have stress-related sleep issues. So that's sort of the 35,000-foot pitch of Troll Calm there.
So right now, this is what has happened in my mouth.
Oh, beautiful, man.
And I have one. I have a half on each side. So it's in my upper lip here. You just let it hang out until it fully dissolves. And you did mention that people can just like swallow it. Obviously, you're going to get a better effect if you put it in the buccal sac here. But I do want people to know that you can still get a benefit from swallowing it. And that at least keeps you from having to have a blue mouth for you know, part of your day.
Yeah, exactly. And specifically Just Blue, which is purely methylene blue, you can swallow that because it'll help. Methylene blue is an antiviral and antifungal. It'll help with your gut health too. The one thing that you hinted at, Josh, there is that you can swallow it. You will need a higher dose likely because you don't get the benefit of passing first pass metabolism if you swallow it. And so that's just something to keep in mind for people.
Getting to the part of the show where I ask two questions. And I'm very interested to see what your answers are to this. My first question is, Boomer, what are two pet peeves of yours? What are two top pet peeves?
The number one, it's not really a number one. And I'm just, it's interesting because like the pet peeves are things that, the two that come to mind, let me just share these. One is people that chew with their mouth open. And this is just something that I've had, And I'm throwing out things like smoking because largely that's dying off and you can kind of avoid it. And I'm no longer in the dating world, so it's not really something that comes to my mind too often. But chewing with your mouth open. And then the second one would be somebody who doesn't read their email, right? And so like... and this happens every once in a while, like you get busy and you skim over the email, but like somebody who you're heavily reliant upon and they just kind of completely miss the point. And so that's just like a pet peeve that, you know, if you're in a position of responsibility, like you kind of need to read through stuff.
I can certainly relate to your first pet peeve because it is actually when I was episode one of this show was an interview of me in which I had a co-host at the time, Grace, and she interviewed me and she asked me that question. And that was my first response, which is, I call it smacking. Where I'm from in Oklahoma, we call it smacking. And so, but not everyone calls it smacking or understands what that is, but it's essentially chewing with your mouth open. For me, it's just like putting fingernails on a chalkboard. I just can't hear anything other than that.
Yeah, it's what's interesting is that culturally, sometimes this is very acceptable, right? Like if you go to Southeast Asia, where I lived for 5.5 years, that was a very large adjustment. It's still not something that I've fully swallowed the poison, right? But if you go to a ramen bar, and this is back when I ate ramen, but like if you go to a ramen bar in Tokyo, slurping is a form of expressing gratitude to the chef, right? And saying like, hey, chef, this is good food. That took a hell of a lot of like, holy shit, I don't know where I am right now, but that took a lot. It was like a very good exercise in acting, really. Because look, the ramen was probably the best ramen I've ever had and ever will have, but I still don't want to slurp. I still don't want to hear slurping. So again, like it's the beautiful thing about traveling the world, as you know, is like sometimes culturally you get these experiences and you're like, what the fuck am I doing here? But it's awesome.
Yeah. Well, thank you for those. The last one is certainly one of my favorites because of what it elicits from a person and what it brings out of myself when I hear it. What is something you're most grateful for?
Oh, man. Just one thing? This is very hard, right? I'm going to give you two. And one of them, I'll say this because of what it brought out in me. Obviously she's very important in my life, but my wife, Bessie, and I met her on a beach in Bali, right? And it was like complete accident. I actually wanted to go to a different party. And I met this woman who came up to me and asked me if I was gay, right? And, you know, she then told me, yeah. And then she told me she was from North Korea. And I was like, okay, well, I can become the Fresh Prince of Pyongyang, right? And so it was just like this beautiful experience. But before meeting her, I had no idea what this thing called the present moment was. If we would have had this conversation back then, chances are I'd have my phone out here. I'd be checking my emails. I would be, you know, I was one of those people that planned goals, like 5-10 years in advance kind of thing. Right. And, or like in the middle of achieving a goal, I wouldn't even celebrate it because I'd already be on to planning the next goal. So Bessie introduced me to the present moment. And so I'm incredibly grateful for that, for her, for that. And, you know, there's like laundry lists of people. You can imagine the entire Truescriptions crew are people that I'm grateful for. But I'm going to say this because you're the host of this show. I'm grateful for meeting you because you've actually reframed how I look at movement and using that term movement more specifically rather than exercise, right? And how I look at a whole lot of things, because you and I, we had coffee with a couple of people that are in the psychedelic space, right? And one of the things that I, when I was introducing you, I said, you're a person who dissolves boundaries and really looks at how to produce the best in a person. And so whether it's movement, whether it's a peptide, whether it's a conversation, you dissolve boundaries. And I really appreciate that about you. Like you're not constrained by, I am Josh Holland, the personal trainer. You're not like that may have been something you've used in the past, but you've dissolved that. And so, you know, I'm grateful for you and all that you've contributed to the world and certainly to my arsenal of tools in the toolbox. So Josh, thank you.
Boomer, thank you. It's beautiful. And I'll never forget that moment when you, because we were all together in that meeting you were talking about, and I just thought, wow, like to be in the presence of someone at your caliber of people. And also I had the great fortune of being able to meet Bessie as well, finally. So that was beautiful. So
you met her before Ted and Scott did, actually. So it's kind of funny.
You know, it was really nice to see the other side of you and to also understand everything you just mentioned about being grateful for having met her and what she's brought to your life. I get it now. I absolutely get it. And it was such a beautiful situation seeing you two together and being able to watch the show. So thanks for that. Before we sign off, can you let people know the best ways to keep up with you and everything else you have going on?
Yeah, sure. So I think the two places to start in terms of how I spend my time are homehope.org, troscriptions.com, and then LinkedIn is probably the best way to get a hold of me. And I, at this point, still check all of my messages. And so send me a message there. Instagram, I'm not super active on there, mainly because I get really distracted. And like it seems to be a endless pit of distraction at this moment. And so, but you can send me a message there. I do get on there on occasion and check things. So you can find me there. Those really four places are the best ways to keep in touch right now.
And we will list all the links because I must say, and I told you this as well, but you guys are doing really awesome stuff with your Instagram, or at least with social media in terms of Troscriptions. So if you want to have if you want to see some of the cool content that's coming out from the team, definitely check out Troscriptions on social media. And I'll also make sure to list all the other things that we talked about in here. We're going to have a whole list of descriptions in the show notes here. So feel free to check that out. It's a really awesome way to support not only this show, but to support people like Boomer and myself and everyone else that we support. So don't hesitate to use those links. And until next time, this is Josh signing out. Simply walk the talk.
Walk the talk, talking facts. Move like me, but I move a little fast. Make my move, here to last. Fasten these seatbelts, I'm coming past. Take care of me, longevity. Hack my biology, better believe. Walking the talk, soul, mind, and body connected. Better come give us a listen.